Sports Talk Chicago with Joey Christopoulos is brought to you by...
Injured in an accident? That's no game. But you can bet those insurance companies are going to play dirty to keep that cash from you. What you need is a most valuable player on your team. MVP Injury Law has been bringing home the gold for their clients for over 30 years. No win, no fee. MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
312-883-9500-MVP.
MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
Welcome to Sports Talk Chicago. And now, with your host, Joey Christopoulos.
Happy Saturday, and what's up, Chicago? This is Sports Talk Chicago with Joey Christopoulos right here on WLS AM 890. We're talking Thomas Brown, Caleb Williams, Matt Eberflus. So without further ado, let's get to this week's episode. Chicago Bears lose another heartbreaker, now carrying a four-game losing streak heading into tomorrow's matchup against the Minnesota Vikings. Look, what else is there to say? I've said it all here on the show. Matt Eberflus is not the head coach moving forward. And to lose to the Green Bay Packers, I know this is maybe a little bit late in the week, but man, it still stings and is still sticking around with me because for the most part of that game, the Chicago Bears, the players on the field, outplayed the Green Bay Packers. And our rookie quarterback led a beautiful drive down the field to put them in a position to win a game. The second time that our rookie quarterback has been able to do that. And of course, the Green Bay Packers come out on top once again. It's been beaten like a dead horse, but Matt Eberflus opting to kick a field goal on second down with 35 seconds left. Now, here's the thing. There's a couple of different ways he could have sliced that. The first one is obvious. You can run the football. You still have a timeout left. See if you can get a couple extra yards. The second one is you could throw the ball. See if you can get a completion. You don't want to put it in harm's way. You tell Caleb that if he doesn't have it within that 2.45 seconds that he was getting the ball out throughout this entire game, you throw that ball away. Which then means that the clock stops. You can then huddle up and run another play, then call your timeout. You had multiple bites at this apple to put them in position to get a little bit closer to kick that field goal. And Matt Eberflus opted not to do it. There's a great clip running around through CHGO Sports this week of Mark Trestman kicking a field goal on second down, it not working out, the Chicago Bears losing, Matt Nagy making the same decision in 2019, it not working out, and then Matt Eberflus doing the same thing, and all their explanations are eerily similar. And the pain continues, especially when it comes to the Chicago Bears versus the Green Bay Packers. Moving it forward into the reality of the situation. And I just want to throw this out there. And look, a lot of people, this is an easy one to jump into the YouTube comments and push back on. But I just want you to keep in mind, Bears fans, as you move forward, especially with Caleb Williams heading into the end of his rookie season. We're in the second half part of it now. We want to grade him, obviously, on performance. A lot of people are going to try and grade him on results. And to be very fair, let's be honest here. Caleb Williams has won us two football games, has put us in a position where the percentages, the win probabilities, were definitely over 90% for the Washington game, and you would think we're probably in the 80 to 90% kicking a 46-yard field goal. Maybe you let your rookie quarterback run another play, but I'll get to that a little bit later. But there are these strange commonalities. I'm not here asking for revisionist history. I'm not here asking, you know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda, but I'm gonna do a bit of a sliding doors. And I want you to just keep this in mind with Caleb moving forward of how things happen and how the Chicago Bears can obscure how we view our quarterback in this town. The first one I just mentioned. I know a lot of people don't like Jay Cutler. I'll be honest, I was a bit of a Jay apologist when he was playing. I always thought that we could win with him. We got pretty dang close. It never happened. They moved on from him. But for all those detractors out there of Jay Cutler, let's be honest, what happens if the Chicago Bears win the Chris Conte game? What if Jay Cutler beats Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers and gets us into the playoffs? I'm not saying we think of Jay completely differently, but I am saying that we may give him a little bit more credit, or it might have changed slightly the narrative that what we ended up having for Jay Cutler moving forward. Again, another case with Mitch Trubisky. I'm going to do it for all of them. Mitch Trubisky in the double doink. Now, don't get me wrong. Through 3.5 quarters, Mitch was not good. And in fact, a month leading into that game, Mitch was not very good. And Mitch versus the Eagles was terrible. But when it mattered the most in the fourth quarter, results-based business, Mitch Trubisky made a couple of great throws, specifically a couple to Allen Robinson, and put us in a position to have our field goal kicker kick a game-winning field goal to win a playoff game. And at what percentage would the narrative have changed just slightly if Mitch Trubisky was known as one of the Bears quarterbacks that went down and won us a playoff game? Would it have changed some of his confidence? Would it have changed the momentum? Would we think of him differently? These are sliding doors things that I'm just hypothetically walking through. But they are interesting what-ifs of how we view the quarterback in this town and how so close we came to viewing it a little bit differently. Justin Fields. Now, these aren't quite the same as Cutler and Mitch. So I'm already going to take this down a notch. Before everyone freaks out on me, I'm going to talk about Justin Fields for a second here. But a lot of people, especially in the offseason, love to throw around Justin's career record. And look, he can't run from it. And the facts are the facts. His career record with the Chicago Bears was awful. Did not win many games. But ask yourself a question here. If Matt Eberflus in the Chicago Bears defense doesn't blow, what was it, a 28-point lead versus Denver, which just so happened to be Justin Fields' best game as a pro, the Chicago Bears don't blow a 26-14 lead in the fourth quarter against the Detroit Lions, which just so happened to also be Justin Fields' best throw as a pro to DJ Moore down that seam, a beautiful 29-yard pass that put them up, which seemed like for good at the time. Or what if we don't blow that 10-point lead 17-7 to the Cleveland Browns? You switch those three wins around, 7-10 turns into 10-7. Justin Fields goes to the playoffs. Do we have a different conversation? And do I think ultimately we did the right thing by moving on, especially from Justin Fields and getting Caleb Williams? Ultimately, I do. I really do. But we're in the same spot right now. We are in a position where our head coach has now blown two games and two game-winning drives from our rookie quarterback. I led off this show talking about my five worst Bears-Packers losses. The lead for this show should have been how our rookie quarterback literally put his team on his back and drove down the field, put us in a position, and we kicked a game-winning field goal, and we beat the Green Bay Packers. One of my checklists or things, boxes I want to check for my rookie quarterback, these are just pet theories of mine. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what your checklist is for Caleb Williams in just his first year as a Chicago Bears quarterback. One of mine was beat the Green Bay Packers. And the other one was win a divisional game on the road. Hasn't gotten an opportunity to even play that game yet, so we'll see if that happens. But one of them was beat the Green Bay Packers. He put us in a position to do that. And our head coach got scared. And our head coach decided to kick a 46-yard field goal with a kicker who the entire game is known as a low line drive kicker, especially from 40 yards out. And then after the game, the head coach tells you about all the bad things that could have happened. Well, we didn't want to do a fumble. Well, we didn't want to lose yards. Literally, our head coach gaslighting us by telling us all the bad things that could have happened. Coaching scared, reactionary, slow to the switch, risk averse. Have I been using these phrases recently when we talk about Matt Eberflus and his relation to Caleb Williams and the way he coaches his football team? I have. And all these phrases continuously pop up with Matt Eberflus over and over and over again. And it's obscuring the view of how we are trying to look at this rookie quarterback right now. We want to walk out of this season saying that he's a franchise guy. We should be talking about how our rookie quarterback has two game-winning drives right now. But we don't, because of the Hail Mary and because Eberflus got scared and decided to kick a field goal on second down. A lot of people want my take on how they feel, how I feel personally about how Thomas Brown did. What's the future going to look like? Was there any significant change? Or was it just a breath of fresh air? Change for change's sake brought some success to the team. Well, here's what I will say. And I don't want this to seem sarcastic or glib, but I want this to be taken in the light that Chicago Bears fans deserve better. And Thomas Brown, in his first game as offensive coordinator, I think he just looked coherent, which is a large step up than what we've seen from Shane Waldron. Coherency. I mean, let's just start with the body language stuff, the tenor, the stuff that we can watch on our couch when they cut to these guys on TV. Thomas Brown in the booth looks calm, cool, collected. Dude was not flinching, all right? And he seemed to have every single answer. He seemed to be one play ahead, which is what you need to be as an offensive coordinator so that these plays can stack on top of each other. We all know that when we cut to Shane Waldron on the sideline, there was one that people were having a lot of fun with, of him shaking with the play card. There's some people that say that that's just a part of, you know, a tick that Shane Waldron has. So I'm not digging in onto that one. But the one that we all know is that Caleb Williams, after games, wants the play call to come in faster. I've talked about it before. Caleb Williams wants to play faster. He wanted to play no huddle. He wanted to get things going into his headset. And I think Shane Waldron was slow on that. And Thomas Brown seemed to be the type of guy that was just giving the play, feeding it, knowing the next one is. Next play, stack on top of each other. Do you want something tangible from Thomas Brown? I will tell you this and take an... to keep a close eye on it when the Bears play the Vikings this week. Before Thomas Brown took over under Shane Waldron's offense, Chicago Bears ran the fourth fewest pre-snap motion at 44% under Shane Waldron. League average is about 50%. Thomas Brown in week one, 66%. That's a tangible difference. Your rookie quarterback after games praising the operation and communication that the plays were coming in faster. And then the other part that I really liked, and the fact that now that the Chicago Bears are 4-6, I got to see more of this stuff, is I did feel like a lot of times in this game, Thomas Brown went out of his way to try and empower Caleb Williams. They went 3-for-3 on fourth down. And some down and distances and some place in the field where maybe if they were 6-4, or you know what I mean, if they were... the season was going a different way, maybe they played. We would have played a little bit more cautiously. And for a Matt Eberflus team that always is doing everything they can to avoid risk, play vanilla, play boring, I thought going for it on fourth down, I was like, wow, this is a breath of fresh air. And when you saw it, you're like, look, we're putting this into the QB's hands, and we need Caleb to make a throw and go out there and do it. And that's what was so impressive of me with Thomas Brown. I want to see more of that stuff. And when we talk about the pre-snap motion, a couple things. One, with the pre-snap motion, it does leverage some of the linebacker looks where if you switch a guy from the left side of the field to the right side of the field, Caleb can then see whether a linebacker who is supposed to maybe be guarding him or maybe supposed to be blitzing, do they shift to cover that piece? Do they stay where they are? It can kind of reveal some tells from the defense before the ball is snapped. Maybe gives Caleb a bit of a cleaner look. The other part about it too as well is we need a bigger sample size of evidence But the thing we wanted to see with Thomas Brown that did not happen with Shane Waldron is we saw what I thought was similar formations, but different plays being run out of them. With Shane Waldron, it's out there now. You can look it up that Shane Waldron was running all these different formations. And each time they ran a different formation, the defense knew exactly what was coming because they didn't run any alternate plays off of the formation that they saw. So just imagine if you're the defense and the Bears line up a very specific way, but they run six different plays off of that exact same formation, you're going to have a hard time figuring out which way to go on any given play. If you know that when they line up this way, the Chicago Bears are going to run, you line up this way, the Chicago Bears are going to pass. That's what was happening with Shane Waldron. And there were no answers there on top of it. So there are some things that, look, I think this is just coherent, basic NFL 101 offense stuff. And Thomas Brown is at least bringing it to the table. And for whatever reason, Shane Waldron wasn't. And we're going to spend a lot of time figuring out why and how. One of my theories, and look, I am completely speculating here, but I enjoy trying to get into the mind inside the room of what some of these guys are thinking. And I want to talk this out. Because here on WLS AM 890 with Sports Talk Chicago, this is a great place on a Saturday night to walk through this type of stuff. I am trying to wonder about Caleb and Shane Waldron's relationship. When you talk about Keenan Allen saying that Shane Waldron was too nice of a guy, and you talk about a guy like Caleb, who I believe has a path. He has these notebooks. He has these notes every day trying to get a little bit closer towards being a great player, being a Hall of Fame player, being a Super Bowl champion. And Caleb does not lack confidence, right? So if you get a guy who's your boss and he's a really nice guy and he asks you, take any kind of job, and he says, what can you handle? And what if Caleb says, I can handle anything? And even if Shane doesn't believe him, Shane acquiesces to Caleb because he wants to be a nice guy, and he tries to throw a whole boatload of stuff at Caleb. And Caleb was continuously being confident. He would never say no. He would keep saying yes, keep giving me more, keep stacking the papers up on my desk. And what I kind of notice is Thomas Brown is at least trying to be an adult in the room and trying to simplify things for Caleb just a little bit. And when I say simplify, I do not mean dumb down. There are two differences there. Simplifying might just be letting Caleb reach deep down and get back into his natural instincts a little bit. And I remember this, and if anyone out there is listening that can relate, I consider myself, I was a good student, I wasn't a great student, right? And there was these moments, especially in junior high, where you would take these tests. And for whatever reason, I'll never figure out, but for whatever reason, I think it was in seventh or eighth grade, I tested in a math test and I did so well that they asked me if I wanted to go into this AP course, this AP math course. And I said, yes, the test said that I was capable of handling it. I had confidence. I thought, you want to push yourself. You want to challenge yourself. And when I got to that AP math class, I flunked that class so hard. From the moment I walked into that classroom, my head was absolutely spinning. Does it mean that I'm bad at math? No, it doesn't. In regular math with everybody else, a student, but once I got to that AP level, I simply wasn't ready. And is it possible that this analogy that I'm providing is similar maybe to what happened with Caleb Williams and Shane Waldron, where Shane maybe tried to push too many concepts, too much responsibility, too much pre-snap onto Caleb? And look, it's a learning curve. I've talked about it a lot, peaks and valleys. But maybe we're at the point a little bit where we've put a lot on Caleb's plate. For the most part, he's handled it really well. But is it leading to the ultimate success of the team? And what if we pulled it back a little bit and just try to get better at some more of the fundamental, simple stuff, more of the coherency, dial into that pre-snap motion. Let's see if we can really good at, get really good at that and then incrementally get a little bit better. And I'm wondering if that's what happened a little bit. Because the offense, look, the Chicago Bears scored 19 points, right? I'm not like Thomas Brown. I'm not saying he's going to be head coach. I don't think he's going to be with the team next year. But I want to applaud him in the present that I think he did a good job bringing us back to what I've used a lot this year, baseline offensively. 19 points, ain't going to blow my hair back. I'm not going to say, you know, he's the next Mike Martz, the greatest show on turf. Or, you know what I mean, him and Ben Johnson are neck and neck in terms of acumen. But you could kind of tell what he did with Caleb was he tried to kind of dial it back a little bit, simplify it. And we saw moments where Caleb was now able to actually unleash some of those potential that we saw. Those rollouts, those good throws. And you could tell he was in rhythm a little bit more. And we'll never know what happened, but maybe, you know, to Caleb's eagerness to be so great so soon, maybe they overloaded him a little bit. And Shane Waldron simply wasn't the filter able to slow him down and pull on the reins. Maybe he was just too nice of a guy. We're never going to be really sure. But here we are sitting at 4-6 with a new offensive coordinator trying to make the best of it. Coming back here on Sports Talk Chicago with Joey Christopoulos right here on WLS AM 890. I hope you're having a wonderful night on a Saturday, Chicago. Hope you're staying warm. And I hope you're ready for the Chicago Bears to play the Minnesota Vikings next weekend. Maybe we can snap this four-game losing streak. After going 4-2, heading out of London, can you really imagine this is the place that we're at? And can you also imagine we have a head coach now who not only has on his resume a 3-game losing streak, this 4-game losing streak, and of course that 14-game losing streak. He's got patches and holes in that resume. That's a 20-game stretch right there. I know that came over the course of 3 seasons, but man, 3 games, man, that's not winning for a month. How does that taste, Chicago Bears fans? 14 games, 10 to lose a season, 4 to open up last year, and now another 4-game losing streak. Man, it's just tough. And it's the season already. A lot of head coaching candidates, who could be fired, who could be on the way out, who the Chicago Bears could possibly consider. I did a deep dive on this last week, so I'm not going to go too deep. I do want to get into my keys for the Chicago Bears victory over the Minnesota Vikings, but man, New York Giants, bench Daniel Jones. Is Brian Daboll possibly on the way out? Bears fans, with Brian Daboll as a head coach, be of interest of you? Or even more importantly, if you tried to maybe get a defensive-minded head coach like a Brian Flores, like a Mike Vrabel, like Bill Belichick, could you possibly pair him with a Brian Daboll, an offensive coordinator? And is that the type of combo that gets you excited in Chicago? Brian Daboll as an offensive coordinator gets me really excited. Head coach, I'd have to probably think about it a little bit. And I do think he would probably be an above-average candidate in my eyes. Ben Johnson's name is still out there. Now it's kind of flipped, right? This is what's so funny. For anyone not paying attention, is that all the innuendo and rumors and gossip and whispers over the last couple months have been two things. One is that Ben Johnson really wanted the Bears' job last year. Really wanted to coach Caleb Williams. And, of course, we retained Matt Eberflus. Great decision, Ryan Poles. Tongue firmly in cheek. And then heading into this year, it would be that the Bears would be at the top of Ben Johnson's shopping list if he were to become available and interview for jobs again in the offseason. Now, in the last week or so, this is what's so fun about it, is that there are now the whispers and rumors is that Ben Johnson's being told by people close to him that the Chicago Bears is a place where coaches go to die. And I can't refute that statement. For a first-time head coach, they ain't wrong. Now, of course, Ben Johnson is going to want more than $8 million. And Ben Johnson's going to want, I'm telling you, some people say 15. I think it would probably take $10 to $12 million to bring him into Chicago. And I'm very clear on this. The hiring of Ben Johnson would be skeptical to me at best. Now, of course, I'm allowed to change my mind, especially as we move through the playoffs. The Lions offense looks amazing. They go off and win the Super Bowl, and he calls an incredible game offensively that helps them win the Super Bowl. Maybe I can start to warm up to Ben Johnson a little bit. But look, man, I've just been through these offensive flavors of the week, and I'm just looking at specific components with the Detroit Lions, namely their offensive line, namely their running back duo, and specifically Jahmyr Gibbs, a type of player that we do not have right now. And this is year three of them all being together with Jared Goff. And then you have the head of the snake, Dan Campbell, who is one of the better true CEO head coaches in the NFL. So that doesn't necessarily make me think Ben Johnson's going to be a bad head coach. I'm just saying I'm skeptical. Can he lead the room? I'm done with guys that just draw up plays on a board and we implement it. Being a head coach, you got to control the entire 53. And you got to get them playing on both sides of the ball, ready to go every single week. And I think it's fair that I remain skeptical about Ben Johnson for now. Another one, obviously, is Mike Vrabel. I think that'd be a great selection. It'd be a hard-nosed pick. Slam dunk, not so sure. I think the one that actually checks all the boxes, and this has to do with Mike Vrabel, is I'm intrigued by Kevin Stefanski from Cleveland. He's won coach of the year. Took the Browns to the playoffs with Baker Mayfield. The Browns fans loved that team. They were tough defensively. They had a quarterback that made plays. They had a good running back. And they went to the playoffs. He even took them to the playoffs with Joe Flacco. The dude knows offense. And now the rumors are coming out of Cleveland is that they've hired Mike Vrabel as a consultant. And because of the Deshaun Watson factor, all of a sudden Kevin Stefanski is a bad head coach. Then maybe Mike Vrabel might pull the rug out from Kevin Stefanski. Stefanski would be out and Vrabel would be in Cleveland. If he became available, I think we'd have to take a real hard look at that. Because it checks all the boxes that when I bring up Belichick, you know, the too old, washed up, not an offensive guy. Mike Vrabel, not an offensive guy. Brian Flores, not an offensive guy. Kevin Stefanski is an offensive head coach who's proved it at a very high level and has taken teams to the playoffs. And up until the Deshaun Watson era, was actually building a level of consistency and legacy in Cleveland. A hard thing to do. I'd be very interested in Kevin Stefanski. The final one is the pie in the sky. Would the San Francisco 49ers grow tired of Kyle Shanahan? And all I can say is, man, drink that warm milk, 49ers fans. Turn the lights down low. Watch a night, put on Planet Earth, the documentary. I want you real sleepy. I want you real tired of Kyle Shanahan. I want you snoozing. Please cut that dude loose. Of course, if Kyle Shanahan hit the street and was available, I don't think that there's a dollar amount in the world that we should not consider to bring him in. I think that's the easy slam dunk. But again, pie in the sky. I digress on that one.
Injured in an accident? That's no game. But you can bet those insurance companies are going to play dirty to keep that cash from you. What you need is a most valuable player on your team. MVP Injury Law has been bringing home the gold for their clients for over 30 years. No win, no fee. MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
312-883-9500 MVP.
MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.